Lows and near the lows. It's Wednesday, April 17th, 2024. This is Overtime. I'm your host, Chris Vecchio, the man in orange, Ilya Spivak, the man in blue, Dylan Radigan. Here to take you through the top of the hour because futures markets are still open, and so we can still do damage here while markets are open. That's for you, Tom. But it was an interesting day today. Oil comes off the board very sharply. Dylan, hat tip to you. You've been looking at trying to get the other direction there. Ultimately, we see that bond yields take a trek to the downside, but did stocks go up? They did not. And that perhaps may be a concerning thing, particularly for someone who is nibbling here back on the long side a little bit today. I'm not liking the price action here at the end of the session, after 3 o'clock especially, but we'll talk about those technicals and more elsewhere. Gold, silver, they had gains. They oscillate back and forth between gains and losses. And on the day, gold's down by 0.81%, silver up by 0.09%. As mentioned earlier, crude off by 3.06%. Natural gas reverses a much bigger loss, was down over 3 itself today, now only off by 1. And the dollar comes back in. I think the dollar action here, easily explainable. It's been behaving like a petrol currency. It's sensitive to oil prices. When oil goes up, the dollar has been going up. Maybe that's from the pass-through in yields. But yields are down, oil's down, the dollar's down. So it's not really a remarkable day for much of anything, except for what I see in equities, guys. I don't see a market that responded that in a way consistent with anything the bulls would have wanted over the course of today's session.
No.
For people who are hoping for a bit more of a substantial rebound like myself to kind of close a loop on that futures power hour conversation, we got the move back above 50.78. And I got triggered long because it was a false breakout to the downside. And then we are now back below that range. So I've now got a little bit of stuff on my hands here where I might close this out tomorrow. Because quite frankly, if we are below 50.78, as discussed yesterday, that means the path of the least resistance is to 5,000.25. So this may be a very, very quick trip in and out, 20 minutes.
this could be spicy now. I agree.
The candlesticks down here don't look good.
In the queues, the NASDAQ, the positioning in S&P here, not looking encouraging if you're looking for the end of this, and looking very encouraging if you're still holding bearish exposure. I did clean up a little bit of my dollar long exposure. I thought the euro was getting a little bouncy. I thought the Aussie dollar was getting a little bouncy, so I took those off and booked some P&L there. The Aussie let me out with only just a sliver of positive gain because I was pretty late on that one. But the euro, the latest leg, I was short from about 108, so that was a nice little pickup. I'm still short the pound, which could make no hay of hotter inflation data overnight, right. And so that was encouraging. I still have that. I'm going to be looking to probably load back up on dollar longs after whatever correction is going to play out here in the euro and the Aussie. But as far as equities go, the magnet around 5,000 on ES seems to be still very, very potent.
It does. And we run into the low that we had in the pre-NVIDIA earnings world back in February here in the NASDAQ today, and we begin to bounce from there. But the bounce is tepid and does not last long here in the Russell as well. We're sliding into effectively the lows of the day as we go towards the close here.
Yeah.
Look, I mean, if you're above 18K in the NASDAQ, you have a case for a long. Maybe if you want to play a long off of the swing low here, that worked intraday today. But the head and shoulders, or at least the measured move here of the double top, I should say, head and shoulders is S&P. The double top is still 17,300 on a technical basis. So we haven't achieved that yet. I mean, if we were down at 17,300, I see highs in December.
There's something down there.
There's something down here, which actually then something you, down know, there. You like get to the measured move.
16,950, 17 and change, something like that.
Right. And so just a simple high from the low of the range subtracted from the low of the range. We'll call it 17,300. What's stopping us from there? This was supposed to be at the NVIDIA low. I mean, psychologically speaking, getting through the NVIDIA low means a lot for the NASDAQ. So Dylan, you're selling your call spreads here today. Obviously working out very well. I still don't see anything I like on the long side here in NASDAQ. The little bit of the long I have in ES does not look good. If this was the price that I saw earlier today, I wouldn't have been in. but I may have just got sucked into a little bit of a bull trap, break out of a range, return into it, only to get slammed back out. That's how you shake out bulls out of the market. That's how you get weak hands out of the market.
And you were quick to exit. I mean, I guess all those things sort of, I think, speak to the negative momentum, which is self-evident. Again, for me, the discussion since we started this week on Monday is not even so much about the direction, because I just think it's going lower, so much as it is the strategy to benefit from that. Is it the call spread? Is it what, you know, the 1,001 ways to skin this?
Well, the call spread right now probably still makes sense because vol has ticked up and buying a put spread down here, right? You know, if you are looking at a situation where the market does rally tomorrow, it does rally on Friday, and volatility comes out of the market, then the put spread deteriorates in value very, very quickly. So selling the call spread right now makes a good deal of sense, because if the market does go up and vol comes off, then at least the volatility coming down balances off the directional price move. So I understand that. I like that here still from a technical standpoint. From a volatility perspective, conceptually, that makes sense. I'm curious as to what you guys think about the theory about this particular start to the month of April being exacerbated by short-term liquidity issues in the market. You know, you have the first week of the quarter, which typically brings about rebalancing. And when you have a very strong bull market, you need to rebalance because some things get overweight and other things get underweight. And portfolio managers' pensions have to stick to certain asset allocation mixes. But then you also run into tax season. And as we've learned from the data that's been put out over the past 48 hours, the tax season was particularly fruitful for the US government. They brought in, there's more money in the Treasury's general account than consensus forecasts were indicating. We're also seeing the fact that refunds are lower than they are expected to be. So that means that there's been a bigger liquidity drain in the system than I think people have appreciated. Where do you get your taxes from? Where are you going to pay your taxes from? Well, you got two places, maybe three: under the mattress, out of your bank account, maybe from a brokerage account. And so the fact of the matter is that with tax day arriving at this, you know, after such a strong run up the last two quarters, the run up in nominal capital gains stipulated that there would have to be a good deal of tax related selling. I can get that liquidity argument. I mean, that conceptually that makes sense. But also this time feels different, because if that was the case, why isn't the stock market higher on a day when the dollar's down, oil's lower, and yields are lower? That's the biggest problem, I think, for bulls right now. This should have been a clean day across the board when you look at cross asset performance, and equities could not take advantage of it. Or at least equity bulls could not take advantage of it.
I agree with both, with the way you've framed this, I think, completely, where it's not an illogical argument. It's just show me the evidence.
Right.
Right? Because when you look at it, you say, okay, well, okay, I get it. I get why that makes sense. But when you look at it, you have to ask yourself, I think, well, number one, is there enough volume in the retail investing tax paying space to really make a difference? Are we not mostly talking about institutions, and wouldn't institutions have made these provisions to pay their taxes without having to liquidate big institutional positions? Probably. So is there enough volume here to be market defining? I mean, maybe, but I'd like to see it. I'd like to see something that actually shows that that's what's going on. Obviously, my argument has been very much anchored around the idea that liquidity and the cost of liquidity is really the main thing, but not because of tax-related reasons, more for Fed-related reasons. Because the tailwind to risk appetite, in my view, as we know, since and we know because I've been a broken record on this forever, since the beginning of November up through March the 20th to the day, we have had a situation where future money looked like it was going to be cheaper. Future liquidity looked like it would be cheaper to obtain versus current liquidity. And that's a tailwind for risk. That inspires markets to take risk. Since then, we have seen that reverse. And so I think it's liquidity, just not that liquidity. And the tax argument makes sense, but I'd like to see some sort of analytics to show that, yes, this volume is sufficient, this could have been, et cetera.
If that's the case, I want to see the confirmation on the bank side of the ledger, right? I want to see that. I want to see some information, and we'll look through Fred and we'll look through the weekly reports that you get from the New York Fed, but I want to see that
positioning as well. Something
I want, I want to see something substantiate the point of view. But when you look to the Treasury's, when you go to the Treasury website, you could see here on tax day, opening balance. All right, going into tax day, right? Friday, Treasury balance at $667 billion in it. The day after tax day, $897 billion in it. So the Treasury's coffers swelled on tax day this year. The estimates that I were looking at from the banks and the various research institutions that track these kind of things were saying that the TGA balance should have risen somewhere closer to like $820 billion. So the fact that there's $897 billion in the TGA now means that there's been a little bit more of a liquidity drawdown in the past few days that may have exacerbated some of these market moves. And granted, the market's extremely crowded. We know the CTA positioning was one of the first charts we talked about here in the month of April, 100 percentile for net longs coming into the quarter. We know that there's the Mag 7 trade that everyone is trading. Everyone's in NVIDIA, everyone's in Microsoft. And so the drawdowns are going to be sharper, stair step up, elevator down. So can't totally be surprised. Even if you're on the wrong side of it, like I was last week, you can't be surprised when it happens because that's just kind of how the flows are set up right now. But if there is a liquidity issue, it speaks to something temporary and short-term in nature, but I'd like to see personally a little bit more evidence that as a bull, still someone who's a long-term bull, like, is that argument soothsaying? Yeah, of course. Oh, it's for these one-off factors that my positions aren't working. Oh, okay. I wasn't wrong. Well, we're not going to try to do too much of that, right? Traders were honest and truth seekers, because if you're lying to yourself, then you're not going to make any money and you have to be honest about what's happening in the market. Be objective. But the move in bonds today, Elliot, I mean, do you see this as a potential tradable low yet? Or is there just, it's one day from the recent bounce, that's not quick enough, or that's not enough time for you? What say you? I see
it
a market
looks like
here.
A retest. This
it does, November 27th low.
Yeah, this looks like a retest. I would like to see, as ever, I mean, I look at this in the most simplistic of terms, right? What we have from about the beginning of this month, give or take, maybe a little bit earlier, let's call it mid-March or so, a series of lower lows and lower highs. Let's break that series. Let's see that we've actually turned. And I'm okay with not buying the absolute low. That's okay. So if I look at this kind of levels specifics wise, I look at maybe something like 115 on ZB, maybe something like 109 on ZN. And I say, okay, that's basically the former line in the sand. Let's get back there. And let's see what happens. And if you can, looking at ZB, which I think is a little bit better risk reward at this point, because it's a little bit closer to the deciding line. I mean, if you look at a 4-hour chart of ZB, we're basically right there now. I think if you take that out, then maybe you have legs to retest something like 117, 118. And there could be a call spread there.
Well, you could see it if you clear out the most. This has been a very clear market where we establish a swing low, we rally back up. Where does the high come on the 12th of April?
Exactly.
Right at the former low. Where do we rally up to right now? The swing exactly. that we had here on the 11th, exactly. and we're stalling there. That's why I asked, because I look at ZN right now and I go back to that daily chart here and I see a market that is pinned just below. Where do we have the CPI day? Here on April 10th. We hit the low, 108 and 5.5 ticks. What's the low that we have on November 27th? That bullish outside engulfing bar, 108 and 6 ticks. Okay, where are we pinned right now? 108 and 5 ticks. So this area seems like it's an important one, and we haven't yeah. quite scaled it yet, plain and simple.
I mean, that's exactly it. Is I look at this and I go, okay, this has been a very clean stair step down. Let's undo a step.
Well, if the correlation, and granted, the correlation between bonds and oil actually has been reduced a little bit. It's not as close to being perfectly negative as it was a few days ago. I see it as a, see here, CL1, ZB1, enter. It's negative 0.59 now. I think it's worth noting that when we came into the month of April, and spit it out, there you go, negative 0.74. Okay, so the correlation between oil and bonds has been getting less negative. So when ZB was going down, oil was going up and vice versa. Today, though, feels like a very important day for the oil market. And that makes me think if the relationship between bonds and oil persists, then ultimately that should be something that helps the bond market get moving. And that may not be technically driven, of course.
Yeah.
There's a few layers to that that I want to work through, though. I want to go through the technicals here on oil first. The September highs that we've been watching support basically all month long. Today, they come off the board very quickly.
I wonder if there's actually a geopolitical flavor to this. We saw some.
There has to be.
We saw some very interesting comments from Jerusalem today. Sources came out saying that Prime Minister Netanyahu is saying, yes, you know, obviously Israel reserves the right to self-defense. Needless to say that they feel compelled to respond, but they don't need to respond right away. They have a broader strategy with Hezbollah and Hamas and the various regional interests balanced, and that what he's interested in doing is not necessarily hurrying into a response, but fitting whatever the response is going to be into their broader approach, which really sounds like closing the loop on escalation.
It does. It doesn't sound like you're going to see Israeli jets flying over Tehran anytime soon. If Israel is going to do something, it's going to be more in line with operations, clandestine or otherwise, that it's pulled off in recent years, from the Stuxnet virus to the assassinations of Iranian nuclear scientists in Iran, right? Israel has pulled off some efforts to destabilize Iran's nuclear program in recent years without necessarily bringing in the military full force. And maybe that's what Netanyahu's hinting at here. We hear the military yesterday say, like, it's Passover. Like, we're not doing anything before Passover.
Yeah.
Right. So now this is off the board.
Let's face it, what I can tell you with full confidence and personal experience, it is much harder to do things on matzah versus sourdough.
So technically we lose the September swing high in CLM4, right? That's one. It cracks in a very big way. And you could see that it was, you know, there's your support substantiated, cracks. I would also point out that the swing high that we have here from March 19th at 82.38, we close below that today, 82.15 right now. The weekly chart, notice that we are below this yellow line cutting across the screen, folks. We go to the weekly chart. We step back out a few years.
Mm-hmm.
That is the high from June 22, here from September 23. And we're potentially moving below that multi-year trend line in the form of, would you call this an evening star on the weekly chart? Big green up bar, doji?
I would say it's forming, yeah. I would say that this looks, in fact, about as textbook of an evening star as you can get if that finishes.
This is
about as evening starry as you can go.
Right. And it's on the weekly time frame. You know, you usually don't take technical patterns and candlestick patterns too seriously in lower term time frames. But on bigger time frames, and the bigger the time frames get, they usually have a little bit more credibility.
Yeah.
This one here on the weekly, we could see a close this week back below the descending trend line from the June 22 and September 23 highs with this particular three-week pattern in our pocket. That screams top.
And note, by the way, the previous two tops you have on here have very clean candlestick pattern reversals. You have a dark cloud cover at the September 1. You have something that's very similar to that there with a gap. So it's not like it would be weird for a major candlestick pattern. I mean, the bottom there in March is marked by a key morning star. So it's not as if this would be a change of pace. We're not like fishing here.
No, and you could see the morning star version of this in September 2002.
And 2000, March.
22. You could see it in March. Here, 21. Yep. You got another one here, right?
A big one there, yeah.
You know, sometimes you get false signals, like the weekly one at the end of January this year. That was a big bearish outside engulfing candlestick, and that went
so
nowhere.
So this would be one of those times, right, that I get pedantic and go, yes, that's a key reversal. But in order to be a bearish engulfing, it's got to be at the top of a trend. And not, and it doesn't go. Right.
And it doesn't go. But this one is.
On shorter-term time frames, those kinds of distinctions fade because really what you're looking for is the flavor of the price action. On longer term time frames, like weeklies, these definitions start to really matter.
They do. So oil here, there's two things about this, right? Oil is coming off the board pretty sharply and stocks aren't rallying. There's part of me that looks to this action and says, how come bonds aren't up more, right? Mm. If this was all about oil, mm-hmm. well, we are back to the lows that we were in oil at the start of the month. But when you go over to ZN, are we back near the highs that we were at the start of the month? And the answer is very plainly no. So as much of this move in bonds that has been driven by oil, there's also another layer to this. Bonds have not just been responding to oil on its own. I think what you can look through and pull out of that is this is also about a repricing of growth expectations through the bond market. So oil may have been up because of geopolitical risk premia, but oil was going up anyway for other reasons unrelated. And so bonds aren't recovering in lockstep right now. And that tells me that while there may be a bond bounce, particularly if oil comes off the board, inflation expectations drop, the risk premia comes out of the market a little bit, maybe gold pulls back. I don't know if this is going to be the low, right? Right. There's still 19% chance of a Fed cut in June. A cut is still favored for July. A cut is still favored, if not July, then September. You know, the market was sailing past the Fed. The Fed kind of re-anchored the conversation yesterday, saying rate cuts this year may not be possible. And so the market may still want to price out those cut odds for June. Right? More weakness in the SR3 contract is probably going to hold back ZT from a significant rally over the next few weeks. Yeah. I would be selling strength in bonds. Trading this off the low is different than trying to fade this move, is different than fading the move. So patience, I think, is worthwhile because I see vol here, 37.6, ZB 23.2. You know, capital's finite. And when you look to equities you look to precious metals, I mean, there's a lot more vol out there. So where's the sexiness of a bond trade at the moment? I don't see it. And I don't see us, you know, necessarily clearing out even in ZB here when we're like looking at ZN before. This stair step lower phenomena that's been taking place over the course of this month, it's still here. So until that ends, I'm personally very reticent about looking long the bond market. I would have expected it to be much stronger today given a 3% move in oil, and it didn't. So that forces me to reassess my prior held beliefs.
Yeah. I mean, I look at this and I say we don't have confirmation technically. We don't have the makings of this reassessment of what the Fed's going to do being at anything like an ending. And I think at the very least, where could that ending come? Either the data turns violently bad. There's not a lot of space for that to happen here. A lot of the big releases are out of the way. probably the next Fed meeting is the first kind of real opportunity. So we're talking early May. May 1st, I believe, is actually the day of the meeting. So I think there's there seems to be room here. And if what we heard from Powell yesterday, I think you're absolutely right to flag that. That was a very important change in the rhetoric from the place where you'd want to see it. If Powell set a stage here, we're going to get a chorus now. We've been getting some of it already, but we have, it's just going to get louder.
Yeah, Bostic was out there saying it for a while. Yeah. Right?
Bostic, and then Powell comes out a few weeks later. I mean, obviously Neil, but Neil does that. Neil oscillates between extremes.
He's a hawk's hawk or a dove's dove. Ilya, talking about the stair step up, elevator down, it took us 27 days. You know, we're trading at 50-60 right now. The last time we traded at 50-60, was February 21st. It took 27 days for us to go from 50-60 up to the high on April 1st of 53.33.5. And then it only took 12 days to go back from 53.33.5 down to where we are right now at 50-60. So stair steps up, elevator down, the declines come faster than the rallies does. And when you have a crowded market, I mean, is this necessarily helpful for where we are today? No, but I would point out that this is something for people to keep in mind in the future, that when you get a crowded market and, you know, positioning is at, or sentiment's at an extreme level, 100th percentile for CTA positioning, for example, when things go south, they can go south faster than they went north. And that's exactly what this market's been. Ilya, we were looking at 51.25 yesterday. We never quite got there. We dropped below 50.78. So my plan today was, okay, let's see what happens at 5,000. But then that little monkey brain of mine said, okay, well, if we get back above 50.78, then that's a consolidation that failed to break out. Let me get in long. We get in long. It rallies. I'm feeling good. And then 3 o'clock comes and now we're back out of the range. And so I'm out. Right? Yeah. That you just, I was taking a nibble. I took a small, very small.
Sometimes you got to take a nibble. I mean, I was nibbling on MNQ put spreads before it rolled over and really only stuck with it once it looked like the move was really and truly changing gears. So I'm completely open-minded to a nibble. Makes sense to me.
But we'll have to wait to keep nibbling, of course, because it's... not looking good on either end. NQ, ES, both continue to go down. Russell as well, the weaker of the three into the close, which is kind of hard to believe. 1962 right now, Ivy rank of 87.1. You know, talking about nibbling here. Gosh, I would, you know, 1950 down to 1900s looking pretty juicy for a put spread, but it's another engulfing bar. We moved above yesterday's high and we closed below yesterday's low. So no nibbling. No reason to nibble.
Right. Have to wait. But to Ilya's point, he nibbled on that short position for months and was wrong.
Yeah. Oh, you know, that's the difference, though. He nibbled for months, but he held the position while he was nibbling. I'm the type of nibbler who takes a bite, and if I don't like what I'm chewing, I'm spitting it out immediately. I'm not going to chew it and chew it and chew it to see if the flavor gets better, which is what Ilya did. And granted, it paid out for the second or third or fourth attempt that he was nibbling. But I'm a nibbler. Second. I take... Second, okay, so you nibbled once, held on to it, you chewed it, it tastes good. But I'm a spitter.
I put it on, I'm like, oh, this is not working, run. And then it wasn't going my way, but it wasn't not going my way on the second go around, because the NASDAQ essentially stopped for 6 weeks. And so I just sat there going, you know what? It's not going my way, but it's not invalidating me. Let's see.
And that's when it's worth to keep chewing, right? You're like, this doesn't taste good, but it doesn't taste bad. This one from being something like, this could be tasty, to, this is awful. I actually don't like this flavor.
It's going to get better.
That's what they tell me with like IPAs. They're like, yeah, you just got to get used to the flavor. No, I don't need to get used to the flavor. You like it or you don't. I shouldn't have to train myself to like IPAs. Although I say that about Scotch, and you need to train yourself to like Scotch.
Yeah, so yeah. If you're not a lover of Laphroaig, just give it time.
I'm with IPAs for me, it's like one sip, no thank you. With the Scotch, I will let that swish around for a little while. But that's, Dill, I mean, that's the kind of, I'm going to pick and nibble when I see things start to develop on smaller time frames. because that's what worked in October and November. That's what worked with bonds. We got in early October and we were wrong. And then at the end of the month, we started trying again, selling the put spreads. We started getting long S&P. And then once you get that momentum, okay, can I add more? Can I build on this? Can I move up my stop? Should I get a bigger position here? Should I adjust my parameters so I can take advantage of the move? And so this was like that first nibble. And I spit it out. So we'll go back to the drawing board tomorrow and watch the technicals. And if I get the levels, then that's what you got to work with. You have your levels to work with, and you just have to trade within them. And if the levels disappear, then so does your position. There's no reason to be brave and hold on to it for the sake of soothing your ego, because that's, where does that get you?
It's how you lose money.
How you lose money. Dylan, you're selling calls in oil. You had to jump off screen quickly. Ellie and I are both in agreement. My computer
died inexplicably, actually. It was a catastrophic systems failure that I suffered.
Oh, God, those blue screens of death. You talked about selling call spreads and looking short oil because you thought the risk is coming off the board today, 3% lower. For the sake of the audience who just heard this, I'm going to give you some good news. It looks like that you just broke below the September high that was holding up as support. We just broke below the swing high that we had on March 19th. We're back below that big long-term trend line from the June 22 and September 23 high. So if we close down here, this looks like a major top for oil prices in the short term. And we've seen these kind of tops play out and these bottoms play out, the opposite side and Morningstar candlestick cluster here and here. And now we have a topping pattern here, the opposite side of that. So good news for you on a technical basis, sir.
Yeah, I mean, the thing for me is I like something like this happens and I close it up. You know, I don't have the confidence to ride these things out the way you guys do.
Dylan, you are smart and handsome and you are worth something and you can hold on to that short oil position.
Really? I'm what makes you like, why not collect the out? I mean, it's a 3-day position from Monday.
If it's 3 days, then take what you have.
And I originated the position based on the oil's behavior on Friday with the Iranian retaliation theater. Today happens, forget it, I'm gone.
My perspective on these types of things.
I have less confidence in my selling than I do my buying, with all due respect to myself. It is perplexing to me to, you know, the way that you stayed in the market going up for those, all those months, Chris, of something I never would have done.
May have been luck, right?
No, but I think that both of you are more willing to stay in winning positions longer.
And that's really it, is like my abiding view on my own risk reward is I don't have to get things right a lot, but the price of that is that when you get them right, you have to try to get as much out of them as you can. And then to try to keep the times that you're wrong as small of a loss as possible. And that's how you end up making money overall.
And being wrong 8 times and right twice, but the 8 wrongs are small and the 2 rights run.
Yeah. Yeah. That's essentially the idea. And if I can be right, let's say 40% of the time and keep a risk reward of 1.5 or 2 to 1.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very lucrative kind of an idea.
That's why the risk scaling is so important at the end of the day, right? I mean, I think I mentioned before, historically, like, not this year, obviously, but historically over the past decade, like my hit percentage has been something closer to 44%. And I've always thought in baseball terms, you know, the best baseball players in the world, they get a hit 30% of the time. So when they get the hits, what happens? Do they move runners over? Do they drive them in? Do they hit home runs, right? And so when you get on, and if you can just stay profitable with a lower than 50% winning percentage, when you get on a streak where then you hit a lot right, because your risk management is tailored to keep your winners running and your losers small, that's when you accumulate your bigger gains.
So then what is your indication to sell a winner?
When the momentum turns?
I think, for example, what happened in the Euro today, I think, is a really good example
of what got me
to say, so if you go to like a 4-hour chart, let's say, I think what you see, it's not even the bounce. It's that if you look at exactly, Chris, spot on,
You know how
the series of lower highs and lower lows was violated on a 4-hour time frame. Do I still think the trend is down? Absolutely. But let's see what happens if it gets back up to 107.
And that might be an interesting area, because when you have 107, 107.50, swing lows from February, early April.
Yep.
And that might be a point where, you know, again, bonds are able to rally a little bit. Oil comes off the board. Both of those things should be dollar negative in the short term. But how much can oil come off the board if the market has been pricing in better growth? We're looking at a 2.5% US GDP growth rate right now. In fact, the Atlanta Fed just upgraded their growth forecast for the first quarter, and it's now 2.9%. 2.9%. You know, that's, and it's been accelerating. Back in the middle of March, we were looking at a 2% estimate. And so the growth estimates it's up by 45% since the middle of March. I mean, there has been a repricing of growth and inflation in this market as well. So even if oil comes off the board and bonds move higher here, how much weakness do you really see for the US dollar? If the market is now saying no more rate cuts this year, right? If the Fed's telling us potential for no more rate cuts this year, and there's a better, more optimistic view of global growth. I mean, oil demand's been higher than supply. And oil demand's been higher than anticipated, in part because China's been trying to get its act together.
And failing.
So, but failing, because they are still showing us some data surprises to the upside. Well, and the stock market had recovered in recent weeks prior to the start of April. And so I think there's a better growth impulse out there. So yeah, if there's a rally in bonds right now, I don't think it's, you know, you look at the disconnect between oil and bonds right now. Oil is back effectively to where it started the month of April, and bonds are nowhere near that. So something else has been added to the mix along the way. And I think it's just the general consensus that growth is higher, and so the Fed is not going to cut, plain and simple. So bonds here may stage a rally, but I don't think, you know, where we were in February, 120, 122, that I think we need to wait much longer for. Not in the cards here in the next few weeks, unless there's a big crisis on our hands.
Yeah.
Ding.
I mean, that certainly seems to line up with the general kind of mood here. If you want to put oil in the context in particular of geopolitics, and if we've considered that based on this move, the fear of fear is essentially evaporating because Iran has very clearly done a thing and then signaled we don't want to do any more things in direct, official, no uncertain terms. And Jerusalem today is saying, we reserve the right to respond, blah, 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 but not necessarily right away, and who's to say, and we have a broader strategy, and hedge, hedge, hedge. All of that seems to now suggest, okay, so this is now an Israel-Hamas thing rather than a broader regional oil disruption thing. And if that's what that is, if Iran is very clearly saying we're not interested in wading into this thing directly, and that was our step, well then, that obviously starts a conversation about inflation. It starts a conversation about maybe the Fed gets a little bit more of a gift here from oil and more generally commodities going their way. But also, the Fed cares about core inflation, which excludes energy. And there, it's the real, not even the reacceleration, but the generally well-supported nature of growth and the stickiness in labor markets that matter. And so you have a kind of situation here where oil can fall without that being a reason the Fed gets any more confident in cutting.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. I look at DBC, which is worth noting, while it's the commodity tracking index, over 50% is energy. So you look at what's happening here today in crude and you see how we've come back to support, and really it's only Wednesday, so the lot can go right or wrong here for crude prices. I mean, if we're back at 84 by the end of this week, that topping pattern is more or less negated, because then you're not below the September or June 2022 and September 2023 highs. You're no longer below the September 23 swing high. I mean, there's just so many things that can happen there, but also DBC is right sitting at that 1 month moving average again, which the last time we came into this on March 27th, it produced support. People piled back in. So I think this may be the reflexive tell tomorrow in the market. I'm going to have my eyes on crude and DBC. You know, if DBC closes below its 1 month, we haven't done that since March 5th. That would be noteworthy. And if oil finds its follow through tomorrow to the downside, that would be very noteworthy. Dylan, I fully appreciate the time horizon that you're working with, though. I would absolutely be looking to take profits. You have a big move on your hand today, which is exactly what you were looking for. How much more profit can you expect to realize?
Because but then my next impulse is to reset it.
Reset it with it. But if you're going to reset it, give yourself more room. Give yourself 50 days to expiration, right? Because that's what works against you. You know, it's, I'm going to invoke this. I just finished watching the new show on Amazon Prime, Fallout. Love the Fallout games growing up. Played the first one in 97, one of the first games I had as a kid. There's a scene in one of the later episodes where they're talking about why they're preparing these vaults. The concept of the show is there's a nuclear war and certain corporations have these vaults where people can form these underground societies. And after several hundreds of years, people begin to emerge from the vaults to try to rebuild America. And obviously it's a total nuclear wasteland with monsters and what have you. But one of the businessmen who's talking about why they are trying to create this program and build these vaults so that humanity can survive is because the greatest enemy of mankind is time. Because there are some things that you may want to accomplish that could take you decades or centuries beyond your lifespan. So the best thing that you can do if you have a goal or an objective is to give yourself time to do it, because it's the ultimate apex predator. And that's the actual concept that underlies what happens here in options market. Time is your friend. It's also your worst enemy. It is the apex predator for your short-dated option positions. It can kill you. So oil here may look toppy, saying that it's going to continue to go down for the next day or two. That's a difficult endeavor. The market is probably random on a day-to-day basis. But when you look at the weekly chart, it looks like the path of least resistance is forming to be to the downside. And so if that's starting today or in 3 days, or it starts tomorrow and then we back up for a day or two, I don't know. So I'd rather have just that longer term short exposure, so not have to worry about the timing aspect of the market here, and just kind of keep my skin in the game. So when it does occur, I already have the position and it wasn't the day after I got knocked out or something.
Makes complete sense. And so, yeah, so when I reset, I'll just reset with more time, because the position that I put on this was a 1 weeker.
You killed it. This was a great trade.
Right, but that's why I have a hell of a time, because I love these short duration situations and they don't always do this, if you know what I'm saying.
I mean, it's like a madman's lotto ticket, right? Because if it works out, there's super high convexity to it.
Very madman's delight.
Speaking of madman's delight, my madman's delight trade is now in the money. Yes. I bought the $15 put in DJT when the stock was trading at $74, because what on earth does this company have any business doing at a valuation of a $10 billion market cap when they make less money per year than Waffle Houses make per month? Granted, it's a meme stock and so blah, 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 blah. As of today, I can officially say that the $1.10 I spent on the $15 put is now in the money. It's worth $1.65. It took 31 days.
But what expiration did you buy?
The May. Let's see where we are. May 17th. So I still have 30 days to expiration. I bought it for $1.10. It's now trading $1.65.
Beautiful.
But the madman's delight is working out. And you know what? This could be interesting here, because you get another few days like you've had this week, and all of a sudden this thing can explode in value. So I liked it as a lotto ticket because what's $100, right? $1.10, I'm buying a put. So my risk is absolutely defined. It's either worth zero or maybe more. So there's no loss. So now this is actually something that's fun and exciting, Dylan.
Well, now I want to buy it.
Now you want to buy it too.
I'll buy it at $1.65 after what I've seen in that courthouse from this guy.
Is there, without being political,
got a weak hand? Well, he's just a weak. He's has nothing to do with politics. He is a weak man in a. He's a caged animal, and that guy's out of gas, straight up.
Which is reasonable. He's 78.
Yeah,
I mean, I can't
made it this far.
You know, maybe you should have term limits and age limits, right? You have to take a test to be able to drive a car. You should have to take a test to be able to run a country.
It's exhausting for any person at any age to run a large organization at the same time. It's exhausting for any person to be a defendant in a criminal prosecution in the United States, full stop.
That's right.
They're offering more shares. And now they're offering more shares. Right? So they're adding to the available supply of shares out there. But when you increase outstanding shares, that can be negative, more supply of this stock. Why do companies do stock buybacks? You reduce the available float. It's easier to have a higher share price. Less pieces of the pie going around. So now there are more pieces of this pie going around. I don't know where this is going to go. This is a total meme stock. You know, Nick Batista pointed out weeks ago that the chances of these type of things working out are very limited. He's like, this thing is going to basically have to go to zero for your $15 put to have any value. And the stock has gone from 74 to 26. It's, you know, it's really done a lot of that heavy lifting. So this is the kind of thing that you need to see. And that's the important lesson here. Someone tweeted at me when I put this trade on, this doesn't seem like the tasty methodology. It's absolutely not. It's not the tasty methodology whatsoever. And it's not because when you're trying to get into this market, when you see that it's hard to borrow, when it first started trading, when it was back over 70, it was like three times more expensive to short than it was to get long. And so the only way that you could do it was through puts, but there was the share lockup period and there's little outstanding float. So it's really not a smart trade. And granted, it wasn't a smart trade. That's why we call it the madman's delight. So we'll just chalk this up to being lucky. We'll see what happens. Worst comes to worse, I lose the $1.10 for the single put option I purchased. And if it gets back to 15, Dylan, then we're having some fun.
And it's a madman's ball.
That is then my sins.
And it's
being along the S&P in early April, I forget.
Well, and the madman, nothing about my oil call spread was madman, but for the 1 week time horizon.
It's actually the most sensible thing to do. I remember hearing a story. Where did we read this? I can't remember. What were traders doing during the Cuban Missile Crisis? Like the traders who made the most money were the ones who were saying, I will take the other side of nuclear war. Because if nuclear war does happen, none of this matters.
Yep.
And if nuclear war doesn't happen, then I'm rich. And I really appreciated makes that sense. Perspective, George. You're that like, makes yeah, oil's
perfect sense, by the way.
Oil's running up. No, I mean, listen, you watch Fallout and you go, okay, so I need bottle caps, not American dollars. Got that. When you look at oil, Dylan, there's missile attacks, there's drone attacks coming in from Iran, and you look at it and you say, I should sell oil. And that's a madman thing to do, and it worked out absolutely brilliantly this week. So I think this is the overtime trade of the week. Kudos to you.
It's early in the week. I mean, we have a couple of days here, but I'll take it.
Yeah, but Dylan, there's also another goal of mine here, because you see, when someone tweeted at Tony on, I think it was April 4th, like, when's there going to be a ticker for C. Vecchio? That guy's doing everything right. And you're saying, oh, I got to just defer to Vecchio. He does everything right. That was the top. That was my account high watermark for the year.
You're trying to fluff my bunny now? Or you're trying to...
So now I'm trying to fluff you up, and that way...
Get yourself back into a vulnerable and profitable position as opposed to this godlike situation you found yourself
in. I'll tell you what, now that my shorts are making money, I am a lot more nervous than I was when they weren't.
Yeah, Spivak's making money, you know, for sure. But on the dollar euro situation, on the short S&P situation.
And I couldn't be more uneasy because now I'm like, I gotta not give this away.
You know, I think
I sold the oil. I'm like, forget it. I'll take whatever they're giving me.
It's such a funny yin and yang because I think that in my head, and I've said this here as a joke too, but also somewhat seriously, like when you guys capitulated on being bearish, I would stop being bullish. And I feel like now that I'm like, hey, Ilya, I see the same thing you're seeing. This looks ugly. You're like, ah, crap.
Yeah, exactly.
now that he's not optimistic, like, oh boy. But with
Sosnow's point on truth or skepticism, actually, of all the sort of various disparagements aside, was that in his mind, at our best, and I don't just mean the three of us, he meant like for himself, for Tony, for Victor, for whoever, for Schultz, for Liz, for Jenny, that every voice on the network is a proxy for the thinking of at least a few hundred thousand other people. That to the degree to which you have a point of view, Chris, or I have a point of view, or Ilya, or down the list. And so I think that's why, like, when you change your point of view, it's not just that you change your point of view, but that you're indicative of a broader school of thought, even if it's not with intent. And they may not even be people that follow you, but just in the sort of harmonics of thought that—
Oh, absolutely. You know, if you're a systems follower and you're an archetypical type of trader, then you probably see the charts the same way that other types of those archetypical types of traders do.
But my point is, it makes more sense. It's not just that you're nervous that I become nervous or you become nervous or Ilya becomes nervous when you change your opinion or I change my opinion or Ilya changes their opinion. It's because that change of opinion suggests that there's hundreds of thousands of people are in the seven going through that same experience, which then really starts to, you know, caused you to question a lot of things.
Well, and that goes back to technical analysis being self-fulfilling, yeah. Right? Because if enough people are looking at the 20-day moving average or the 50-day moving average or the 1 month and say, well, it's been holding up every time, so I'm going to buy into it the first time it hits it and it bounces, and then all of a sudden it breaks, you have this whole collective group of technical traders out there saying, hey, this isn't something that's happened in 110 trading days.
Different thing. Yeah.
Yeah, so I should back away. And now you get all of that short-term momentum out of the market. And that's why those TTA positioning updates are so important, because when you get to, I think this is a whole positioning pullback. Look between the liquidity and the positioning. Think about the fundamentals. I know, Ilya, the cost of money, but like, what has changed? The economy's getting better.
Yeah.
That's what's changed. So we're not going to cut rates for a good reason.
Right.
Is that really bearish?
But the cost of capital is still going to remain higher longer.
Yeah, but if we're growing...
But that's the whole thing.
Hold on. Right? Earnings growth is expected to be 3% for the first quarter. We're tracking at 7.1 right now after today's results. Mm-hmm. Earnings are not... We're talking about an increase of maybe 50 or 100 basis points in the cost of capital over what was previously expected, when we're seeing the economy grow 50 to 100 basis points faster than previously expected, and earnings are 300, 400 basis points better than anticipated. Earnings growth of 7 to 10% per year is correlated historically with positive equity market returns on a forward 12-month basis. So what are we really getting bared up about here right now, people? Ilya, you have the floor tomorrow when we start, because that's a question that needs to be answered when Overtime has time, because now we're out of time for this Wednesday, April 17th. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place, every Monday through Thursday here on Tasty Live, 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 Central, right after last call. Be sure to join us for the handoff. But for the man in orange, Ilya Spivak, and the man in blue, Dylan Radigan, I've been Chris Vecchio. Good luck trading. After a brief break, Tasty Live will be back. Evening programming, Macro Money coming up next with the man himself, Ilya Spivak. See you there, folks.
See you there, everybody.
The content of this podcast is created, produced, and provided solely by Tasty Life, Inc. and does not represent the direct views or opinions of any of its affiliated companies. This content is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not, nor is it intended to be, trading or investment advice or a recommendation that any security, futures contract, digital asset, other product, transaction, or investment strategy is suitable for any person. Trading securities, futures products, and digital assets involve risk and may result in a loss greater than the original amount invested. Tasty Live Inc., through its content, financial programming, or otherwise, does not provide investment or financial advice or make investment recommendations. The information provided may not be appropriate for all investors and is provided without respect to individual investor financial sophistication, financial situation, investing time horizon, or risk tolerance. Tasty Live Inc. is not a licensed financial advisor, registered investment advisor, registered broker-dealer, or registered introducing broker.